Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode number 284, and I'm Kevin.
And I am Cyrus Arnold, the star of the 8-bit Christmas movie.
Oh, I was going to watch that the other day. I'm Daniel, but also Joe Hill, apparently.
Yeah, I think you look like Joe Hill, and I'm Doug.
And who doesn't look like Joe Hill?
Intern, do you know we have the mini intern on the show too?
That's nice.
We have a mini intern now, and Spider-Man's here too.
Unpaid. Oh, burnout.
So, what's been happening in the world, guys? Do we have any big news? Anything I need to concern myself with? Anything? Any new babies, no. Movies? It's 2022. I only have 5 movies left to watch from 2021. So by the time people hear this, I'll probably be done.
I have way more.
Yes. I have some movie news if you want to talk about some breaking hot goss.
Sure.
Armie Hammer is going to be taken out of Taika Waititi's next film, Next Goal Wins, and replaced with Will Arnett.
I did read that yesterday.
Which is funny because the movie's already filmed and everything, so I wonder if they're going to be pulling a All the Money in the World.
Maybe digitally removing it like they did with Army of Dead? They pulled everybody out? Dead.
And just the pilot, I think, on that was replaced.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris, when Odelia got removed for Tignataro.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was an Army Hammer pun. Army?
What was it? How am I going to do an Army Hammer pun? I mean, should I pull out some piece of meat and start going?
Already done it, I think.
He's been there, done it. He's moved on to the next bone.
Is that a sports movie, Doug?
Yeah, it's based on a true story about a football coach who comes on and, you know, basic story, takes the team to a championship. It's written and directed by Taika Waititi, based on a documentary, and the leads will be Michael Fassbender and Elizabeth Moss.
Ah, nice. Was he playing like a supporting role then?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure who. I don't really follow football or British football. And so I don't know who any of the people are except Michael Fassbender is playing the coach.
Okay. And obviously Armie Hammer's character was not a cannibal.
Yes, that we know of.
Ah, okay. Maybe behind the scenes. All right.
Okay. Are we starting our first movie?
Another item of news, isn't there?
Oh, yay!
Yes.
Oh,
unfortunately, it's a sad bit of news. Betty White has passed away on New Year's Eve.
Oh, man.
So close to 100. I was kind of hoping she would get there.
I read a tweet that, you know, with all the leap days, she might have gotten there for the 17 extra days because she was 17 days away from 100. On a technicality, she got there.
that's a stretch.
Maybe.
Well, she is in her 100th year. She was in her 100th year, so she sort of made it like that way. Yeah.
See, I thought she was a Highlander.
She was the last of the Golden Girls.
Yep.
Yeah. The last
of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. A full cast, that is. A main cast.
Well, we lost Bernie this year, too, didn't we?
Who?
Adam McLeod died this year.
Yeah. Yes, and Ed Asner. And another cast member.
Yeah, they're all going one after another.
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke, maybe next.
I guess when the cast of Full House goes, I'm done.
That'll be a while.
I think
one of them went to jail.
Ooh.
Lori Loughlin.
You heard that. That's
right.
Really?
I guess she was. Yeah, she was on often enough.
I was going to guess the Olsen twins.
For insider trading.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Hit it.
Yeah. You know what, guys? I'm something of a scientist myself. Boo. Yeah, boo. Oh. That was that. I couldn't recover from that. That was so hard. That's at that moment. Spider-Man, No Way Home.
Can I do a better transition?
Yes, for sure.
How was that? I thought that was a better transition.
Yeah, so
you want these episodes shorter, right?
They're shorter.
It's a special visit there from Peter Porker, the spectacular Spider-Ham. Yes.
Slice is like 20 seconds out of me like trying to do the awkward joke, and then it's just the silence, you know? So that was helpful.
Okay. A bunch of people. Garfield, Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, this spoiler right off the bat.
Directed by John Watts. Oh, did we do the spoiler warning?
Yeah, no, we didn't.
Oh, you didn't.
By the way, we spoil movies in this show.
That was your fault. It's supposed to be done first.
Okay, yes, there you go. It's all my fault. Yes, Simon has already spoiled some elements of the movie for you, but yes.
We'll reverse back time on that.
Read the notes.
Directed by John Watts, written by Chris McKenna and Eric Summers, starring Tom Holland, Zendaya, Benedict Cumberbatch, Jacob Batalon, John Favreau, Marissa Tomei, Jimmy Fox, Willem Dafoe, Alfred Molina, Benedict Wong, Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire. Oh. And many others, but that's all as far as I'll go right now.
Are we going with our resident Spider-Man, Mr. Boyd?
No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, unlike Mr. Boyd, I do not read a script. I do not watch a trailer. I knew nothing about this film going in, other than I hoped Andrew Garfield was in it.
He kept saying,
well, I'm sitting here watching this movie, and I am, like, on board for the first 10 minutes. Absolutely. I'm totally losing my shit. And then he goes to hang out with Doctor Strange. I'm like, I'm loving this. Absolutely losing it. And then when they get to the big scene, he goes, Peter Parker, and they get to Andrew Garfield, I jaw dropped in the theater. Literally dropped. I had no idea. And I'm like, oh, I'm happy now, because I loved Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. Nobody else did, but I loved it. And then when Tobey Maguire dropped, that was game over for me. I was like, yes! I lost it in the movie theater. Absolutely was losing it. Like, I can do not freak out often during films. That one did it. Absolutely amazing. Could not love this film more. Impossible for me to like it more. Unless I had a little bit more action at the end. Now, let's back up. Alfred Molina, de-aging, fantastic. Oh, my God. Like, where was this for The Freshman or whatever that stupid movie I had to watch?
Irishman
with De Niro looking 90. Mm-hmm. I love that scene right at the beginning when Octopus is, like, trying to take out Spider-Man. I'm like, that's exactly what I see in the comic book. To me, that was coming to life on my screen. I have no complaints with this movie other than I didn't like the end. That's my only problem. It didn't have enough action for me. I want a little bit more Wong, but oh well, because I love Benedict Wong. I always need more Wong. I love those interns shoveling snow at the Samsung Torum. Broke me up laughing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great. Marissa Tomei is just wonderful in this film. 57 years old, looks just gorgeous. 59 or 57, absolutely wonderful. Willem Dafoe, oh my God, amazing. He's like he never forgotten how to play Green Goblin. I wish the villains had a little bit more to do. I thought Sandman was just kind of there most of the time. Like, I don't think he was a villain. Like, I still don't understand why they had to cure Sandman. Like, he didn't really do anything to Parker, right? He just wanted to go home and hang out with his kid. He kept repeating that over and over again. So, yeah, that kind of stuff.
But they cured him of being Sandman, though. Like, just so he could be regular, whatever he was.
Flint. He wasn't causing any problems. Mm. You know? And Ned, I wonder if there's another Ned. What a me. And I love the end. I just really, really enjoy it. I love the callbacks to the other films. If you were paying attention, there's just numerous of them. And this film was fantastic. It's just everything I wanted. So I was a little annoyed with the intern. I forgot to add this one thing. So I saw the first end credit scene, which I don't care. It was kind of funny. I thought it was good. And then he tells me to stay for the second one, and it's a trailer.
It's an end credit scene. What do you want? Watch
trailers. So I was really annoyed watching a trailer.
Your problem, not mine.
Yeah, it's your problem because you told me to watch it. So I'm blaming you. So I love Spider-Man. That's all I got to say. Enjoy.
But have you stayed regardless for the second one?
Yeah.
I probably would have.
Okay.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Can I go next?
I don't care.
Okay. This is the most, what, this is only one of a few amazing, one of the few times I've seen Simon so geared up on a film. I agree with him for the most part. I only had two problems with it. Otherwise, it's perfect. The fact where, I can't tell you, can I? The spell at the end.
I'll spoil everything.
Okay. So they're not supposed to remember Peter Parker as Spider-Man, but they don't. What? Ned and MJ don't remember they even know him at all. And I'm going, they knew him 3 years as Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
It's magic. But now they don't know either. They don't know he's Spider-Man. They don't know he's Peter Parker either.
Oh, there's no record of him on Facebook at his old school.
I guess not. You can have that one. The other problem I had was I realize now it's separate universes, but the fact that Sandman remembers that Doc Ock and Green Goblin died, separate movies, but now I realize it's different universes. But they were in different universes. Sandman was not in that universe.
Yeah, he was in the Raimi universe. He was. Just different movies.
But the part I liked as when Andrew Garfield comes in, he says, "You're not Spider-Man." He says, "Yes, I am." Hangs up. Well, this is enough. And then they said, "No, it's not." MJ throws bread at him. He goes, "Really?" That was a bit of comedy I liked. He says, and then she does it again. And I'm going, okay. But other than that, it was great. I loved it too. So I loved it so much I saw it twice.
The movie's so nice you saw it twice.
Hmm?
The movie's so nice you saw it twice.
I said good. I didn't say nice.
You have to go a third time for one for each Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'll do that.
Watch the first one just focus on Tom Holland. Second one just focus on Toby. Third one just focus on Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, it was either that or the one I did. The one the second time I did see the other movie that I saw. So don't ask.
Kevin, did you want to go or did you want me to sneak in before you?
I'll go last because I'll ramble.
Okay. I'm sure I will too. Have you seen me? You know, but I'll be more succinct in my rambling.
Do you want me to go before you guys?
Sure.
Go on. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this movie was a hell of a lot of fun. My big complaint, the ending. It was very hard to tell which Spider-Man was which in the big action scenes. Their costumes were all too similar, so I couldn't really tell if that was Andrew Garfield, was that Tobey Maguire. It was easier to tell Tom Holland apart because he had the gold bits in his costume. That's my big complaint. My other complaint probably is Sandman. I really don't get why he was there. He didn't really add much to the story. Also, it would have been more symmetry if you just had two bad guys for Garfield, two bad guys for Maguire. Aside from that, I enjoyed the movie a lot. Doctor Strange had a bad wig. That's it.
I find it kind of interesting that you guys are harped on, but just focusing on Sandman. I found Lizard had much less to do in a way. I don't know. I like seeing him, but I think I like Thomas Hayden Church maybe more as the character than Lizard. Cause I mean, even when they go up in the apartment, he's just stuck in the high security van. So I thought that was kind of funny. That just proved to me that he was very sidelined. But
Thomas Hayden Church wasn't Lizard. Sorry?
Thomas
Hayden Church wasn't Lizard. He was the Sandman.
No. You got to follow my train of thought.
Sorry.
Sorry. No. I'm confusing. No. Rise of Iphons is Lizard. Yes. Right. Thank you, intern. Right. But I love this movie. I went to go see it on the day it came out at 4 o'clock, and it's so awesome when people cheer in the movies, even at Charlie Cox showing up, and then especially when Spider-Man show up. I loved how that was staged, just them coming through a portal, and I felt obviously there's the rumors that the two Spider-Men are in it, so I was like, oh my gosh, if this is one of them, I'm gonna lose my shit. And then I also just love the, you know, I'm something of a scientist myself with Willem Dafoe. I don't know if anyone else really laughed during that scene. But like, at least in my theater, it was like, how are you guys not like recovering from this? Like, how's that? I don't know if I could focus on the next like moments because I was still laughing at the scientist bit. But Willem Dafoe, he blew me out of the water. Just like the choice to have him without a mask was awesome. And he's somehow more scary than the first time he played it. And it's similar, but just the new layers they're able to bring to him, the new layers they're able to bring to Doc Ock and to the Spider-Man, like Andrew Garfield having that redemption moment, saving MJ with just without the little stupid spider hand on the web from Amazing Spider-Man 2. But yeah, I love this one. And I loved... in Spider-Man Into the Multiverse with Miles Morales in what 2018, but I didn't think I could love a Spider-Man movie, but more than that. And this just blew me away. Everything I expected, it one-upped it. Love it.
All right. Well, I think it's safe to say that I enjoyed it. Spider-Man basically saved movies. In the movie theaters, by making $1 billion, I think it's the second or third fastest rising to $1 billion film.
Is that already for domestic?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, international and worldwide.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So it did it still in 11 impressive. Days. So I think it just hit Infinity War numbers around that, but beat out Star Wars: Phantom Menace. So, which is impressive considering we're still in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, the timing for this, couldn't have been better because theaters obviously shut down here and, well, didn't shut down, but restricted here in Ontario almost right away. So I think the 2 days after it was released, we're down to half capacities and no food or drink sold in the movie theaters. So, good timing there on Spidey's part. I saw it with a packed house and, you know, I think they did a very good job of concealing the spoilers, even though I knew everything going in, but that's what I do. Right.
Sure.
No, I think the crowd went nuts when Charlie Cox showed up as Matt Murdock. They went nuts when the various villains showed up. In particular, the Doc Ock scene on the bridge was fantastic. Very well conceived. And I like the thought put into the car falling off and him taking control of Doc Ock's arms. And
that was good.
And turning him basically into a toothless menace towards the end there. But then Osborn pops through the crowds and you're like, oh, shoot. And then Doctor Strange pulls him out right away before they can have that confrontation. Cumberbatch looked odd in that Christmas themed, like the talk about bad wigs there. It got better as the things went on, but it looked like he put it on backwards or something, maybe for reshoots or something. Well, because a lot of what we saw on screen in the film was different from what they played in the trailers that Simon didn't watch. So a lot of the dialogue was different. A lot of things were very different. So Marvel is always playing with things right up to the very end. All the villains were great. It is important to note that Thomas Hayden Church and Rissa fans did not appear in the film. They are animated.
Wait, what?
They just did voice acting. They're not actually in the film at all. So the scenes where you actually see them in their human form are screen grabs from other Spider-Man films.
Oh,
so, cool. And which is why the Sandman is always in that sand form and not in his traditional, like he doesn't turn into his traditional look, which he would have had Thomas Hayden Church actually been able to appear in the film. Wow. But he did call in his voice performance and did a good job with it. I agree that perhaps he was unnecessary. And I know at one point they really wanted Venom to pop in and be the sixth villain. In it, and then they decided to go a different route with the end credits scene where Venom basically spent the entire movie in a bar in Mexico talking to the guy from Ted Lasso, the stalker is life. Yes.
What about guy. What happened to the Vulture? What, like, where is he at this point?
Still prison. In prison, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
He's appearing in Morbius, which I'm not sure how that's going to work. Because Morbius is set in the same universe as Venom. So I'm not sure how Vulture will appear in Morbius. That's something we'll find out in a few weeks when that film comes out. But they've left a lot open for crossovers in the future. Yeah, the crowd went nuts, of course, obviously, when Andrew and then Toby showed up. And I love that they both had a chance to revisit and sort of, you know, give us an update on where those characters are. They both have their regrets from things happening in the past. So this was an opportunity for them to redeem some of those problems, like Peter, like Toby being able to help Norman Osborn and Dr. Octopus and saving the lizard and so forth. So it's the whole thing is messed up. So obviously the villains go back and they've been saved and cured. So what happens to them now? Does that mean the timeline has changed? I guess not, giving Hulk timeline logic. That doesn't work that way. Their new future would be different, right? Like Toby still lived through that past.
So, I have a question.
Yes.
If this is a Sony movie, does Marvel logic apply?
Does he what? Does it what? Marvel logic? Yeah, I guess so, in theory, because this is an MCU film.
Is it an MCU film? An actual MCU film?
It is an actual MCU film. Because of Doctor Strange and everyone else in it, Wong. Okay. So it fits in. And it does, I mean, that and then the Kingpin's return in Hawkeye indicates that the Netflix stuff is now part of the MCU canon, or a good chunk of it.
You just wanted me to get sidetracked, start discussing Hawkeye, don't you?
No. I'm just breaking up a point that Matt Murdock and Daredevil are now part of it. So is the Kingpin.
Just now, I had a question, Simon. Like, since you don't watch the trailer, like I knew that Doc Ock scene was coming because I recognized the bridge from the trailer. So obviously you haven't seen the trailer, but what was your reaction when you saw Doc Ock?
Oh, I lost it. I was like, this is amazing.
Because I knew I was excited.
I went by myself. I didn't go with anybody. So I sat next to somebody's wife and their two kids. So I was like losing it constantly.
I actually bought a buffer seat. I went with my brother.
I was going to buy a buffer seat because my daughter was supposed to come. But literally, I got home from work. I didn't work overtime. I ate dinner and I went to the movies. Like literally, it was in an hour I decided I was going.
Okay.
I came home, ate, and left within an hour.
Did you nap? You
basically did an intern.
Yes, but I mean, I bought my seat. I didn't just randomly show up and hope there was a seat. I checked online.
I don't do that anymore. I have to book in advance now, so don't give me that.
What do you mean? I bought my seat ahead of time.
So did I. I have to. Like, yeah, with the new whatever the Cineplex has, the membership, you have to book it in advance. You don't have to, but...
Okay, but what I'm saying is you show up at a theater and go, that's playing. I will go see that.
Yeah,
I knew I wanted to see Spider-Man. I had time to see Spider-Man. I went to see Spider-Man.
Right. I did the same thing with Spider-Man. I made sure I got there on time to see it.
But you got there on time. What I'm trying to say is we're different. I didn't just randomly show up and go, I can get a seat to Spider-Man.
I didn't do that for Spider-Man. I said I wanted to see Spider-Man. I went to see Spider-Man.
Like Simon woke up in the morning. He was like, I'm going to go see Spider-Man today. But you might decide like 2 hours before. Not I think it's just
funny. Right. Well, I was hoping. Yeah. I tried to go on the weekend, but I couldn't get a ticket.
See, I went with a large group. There were 9 of us. And so we bought it a whole row of D-Box.
You have 9 friends?
No, it's Putty and his family and my other friend Jason and his family.
You got new friends I don't know about. We'll discuss this later.
Yes.
I
know many people you don't know.
Regular.
I've noticed. I didn't get an invite, so I have to say.
I counted at least 3 friends there, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
He was only allowed to bring 9th. He would have been the 10th.
Kevin doesn't like me.
I'd have to travel.
I went with my kids and they liked the movie, but they hated the movie theater experience because when Toby and Andrew Garfield show, you know, people start cheering, they missed, like, they couldn't hear the dialogue immediately after, like, will you people just shut up? I want to hear. So they want to rewatch it again at home when it comes out on Blu-ray, so they don't have all the people cheering.
See, in the usual experience, that would buck me, but with Spider-Man, I was like, everybody cheered.
Oh, I expect it to be crazy.
Millennial, they were quiet in the two theaters I saw it at.
Millennial gripes. Usually you love opening night stuff because that's the most interactive the audiences get with a film.
We're still going to be like interactive like two weeks into showing, right?
Not so much. Usually you get your hyped up, keeners on the first night.
Ah, true. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I'm curious to see. I'm really kind of glad that Tom Holland's Spider-Man now has that tragic beginning to define him. It's sad that it has to be Aunt May and not Uncle Ben, but...
Oh, it's fine.
But I do like that he has now created his own costume, not a Tony Stark creation, which gives homage to his predecessors. Basically now we have a classic Spider-Man costume in the MCU.
So cool.
Yeah.
I love Spider-Man. Now, are we done with, are we ready to look up at the sky and see?
I have one problem. I don't know why he didn't stop, jump in and help Hawkeye. Because he was literally swinging by Rockefeller Center right at the time that Hawkeye was fighting the Kingpin's tracksuit mafia.
So, well, maybe he didn't notice him.
Maybe.
I haven't watched Hawkeye yet, but I will. Mm-hmm. I'm behind on the Disney Plus shows. And I feel like I have to watch them in order.
No, I wouldn't say you have to.
No, okay. Oh. I might just skip from... I watched WandaVision, so I might just skip to Hawkeye then, because I love Haley Steinfeld.
I will say Hawkeye was my favorite of the Disney Plus shows.
Okay. I pop an episode on tonight then. Are we ready to don't look up?
Yep.
Don't look up. Sorry. Yeah. Directed by Adam McKay, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep, Kate Blanchett, Rob Morgan, Jonah Hill, Mark Rylance, Tyler Perry, Timothy Chalamet, Ron Perlman, Ariana Grande, Himesh Patel, and Melanie Lynskey, and feels like probably a lot of other people that I missed as well.
That's good enough.
Thank you.
Who wants to go? I don't care.
Okay, I'll go. It took me a bit. Actually, it was spoiled for me by a couple of people that it was a satire, but I watched it and I'm going, I hated the satire. Like, I hated this movie from the beginning. It took me, like, I know that they already spoiled it for me, but it took me about 10, 15 minutes to realize it was a satire. And I'm watching it. I'm going, this is not funny. This is not good. I didn't like it. It looked like the actors didn't really want to be there doing this, especially Leo and Meryl Streep. Didn't look like they wanted to be there. I could be wrong, but that's my opinion.
I will finally meant to disagree with everything you just said.
Go ahead.
I think I was having a great time watching this. I thought it was funny. But I like dark comedy, so this was just what I wanted. I mean, once you start figuring out what's going on, he's basically satiring the whole Trump regime. That's pretty much the plan of this film. And Meryl Streep is Trump, and Jonah Hill is Ivanka Trump. I kind of liked it. I mean, it was silly. I just kept making me laugh over and over again. So I got a little slow in the middle when he hooked up with Cate Blanchett. That was also, but I thought the jokes just kept coming. Jennifer Lawrence's star guys. I love when the FBI keeps picking her up, putting a hood on her. Really, guys? The hood and their driver. I was dying. That was funny to me. Meryl Streep going, I wonder how we can work this into the primaries. So we have primaries coming up for the midterms. I go, that's American politics to me. I'm convinced this is how the Americans... Doug lives there. Maybe he can explain to me if I'm wrong, but I really feel this is how American politics work. I think it's just a big circus. All the time down there. So it made me laugh. I had a good time. I liked the end of the film a lot. I liked the after credit scenes. I thought were hysterical. I thought Ariana Grande mocking herself was perfect. She gets it. Like, I wasn't sure Ariana Grande get it. She got it. She got the assignment. I knew what she was supposed to do. And Jonah Hill is great as the press. He's VP or Vice Secretary, Doug.
Well, the president's son.
Yeah, he was just like, yeah, like head of staff. He wasn't.
He was great. I know. I really like this film. I mean, it didn't blow me away, but I had fun watching it. It was a nice break from the serious stuff I was watching. I had a good time, so I will disagree.
I can go next. I'm very indifferent about this film. I'm not a big fan of The Big Short. I really disliked Vice.
I love The Big Short.
You're allowed to. I know I'm the minority on The Big Short. But yeah, I didn't really like Vice. I love Adam McKay's comedies, but I'm indifferent about this one. I thought Jonah Hill was great. I thought Mark Rylance as the super billionaire and just the idea of them. Oh no, let's not destroy the asteroid. It has money on it. Let's risk it for everyone because we have a shuttle that can get us away, spoiling the end of the film. But anyway, I liked how he talked. But in general, I felt like this kind of went through the motions and I've been waiting for it all year and it just disappointed me in a way.
We've been waiting for this all year. I didn't even know it was coming out until you guys told me last week.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was supposed to come out last year. I could be wrong though. Either way, it was one of my more anticipated movies of the year, and I just didn't love it. I didn't think it had funny moments, but I didn't think it was consistently great. Like, I enjoyed the satire of it, and I liked Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence in it, but I guess I just kind of wanted more, and that might just come from the territory of me. I don't know. I just wanted it to be funnier, I guess.
Oh, come on. It's funny when the little kids are coming off the stage and Mark Ryan's press person goes, give me those phones. They're not yours.
When she's like, can I say something? Yeah, that was the funniest part for me. Can I say something? No.
No. That was great.
Yeah, no, it has a lot of funny moments, but it just feels too long, I guess. I'm just kind of indifferent. I don't hate it. I don't love it. Meh. It's fine.
Well, I didn't hate it. I thought it was quite funny, but it was super depressing in the sense that, this is basically a look at the pandemic through a different lens. So the left versus right split, although I think they went out of their way to show that Meryl Streep was a Democrat. Their pictures were with Clinton and other Democratic leaders. So
that could be a Trump thing too, though. Trump had his picture with the Clintons
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump would have been a celebrity at that point, so it made sense.
Mm-hmm. So I thought, sadly, I think this is how something like this would play out. It's bad news. It doesn't play well on the news. So, it's like, oh, we discovered a comet and it's coming to destroy the Earth. You discovered a comet? That's so awesome. But you've completely missed the last part, that it's coming to destroy the Earth. Well, we don't want to talk about the bad news. And, and then she's freaking out and they're like, well, you're welcome back as Mr. Handsome Scientist, but she's not allowed back. And I thought the odd thing was Timothy Chalamet just showing up randomly to be the boyfriend that she's like, oh, screw it. I'll just go out with this teenager. And I thought that was very strange. Sad way to end.
She says, fuck it. She just gave up. Jennifer Lawrence said, I'm going to die. I might as well have something to play with.
Right.
Like, I don't think that was random. I think it was random Timothy Chalamet showed up. Yes.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like his casting in the film. I guess he just wanted to be a part of it. No, I enjoyed The Big Short. I thought that was a fantastic film. And Vice was okay. I do recommend watching this. One of those, let's put the current situations into perspective. Like the denial or the random commercials, on the one hand, the comet could destroy us, but on the other hand, we could all get rich from it. So I'm with the comet.
Yeah.
like random stuff like that. And then they're both having dueling concerts, to raise money to help send another thing of rockets. And actually that whole sequence with Ron Perlman leading the charge of in his shuttle with all the nukes right out of Dr. Strangelove, basically. And then they're like, well, hey, wait a second. What's going on here? They're just turning back. And because obviously the Mark Rylance character had stepped up and said, no, we can't destroy them. We need them. We want the money. We want what's on them. So, yeah. and then of course he's just super confident that his technology is going to win out.
He's offended when like peer review is suggested, right? Yeah.
I did enjoy the bit about how people are going to die. And then he's like, oh, I don't know how she's going to die. She's going to die by something Brathnosaur. We don't know what that a Brathnosaur is, but oh, well, you know, and then they're on the planet with them. They're all naked. And then this bird-like creature just comes over and bites her head off. And this, what is that creature? That's a Brathnosaur.
And that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I do agree. I think that's where almost the film lost me in a way, is when, not from Timothy Chalamet's casting, but when Jennifer Lawrence was just kind of sidelined. It was like, okay, you're making too big of a deal. We need to put you in a town with 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So? I came at this movie. I was not an Adam McKay fan. I've only seen one other of his movies, Talladega Nights. I saw that because I wanted to see Sacha Baron Cohen. I will be honest, I do not like Will Arnett. Will Farrell. We talked about Will Arnett earlier.
Oh, hence no Anchorman.
Yes. No Anchorman, because I just don't find Will Farrell funny.
God. Thank you.
This movie was okay. I really liked the performances in it. I thought Meryl Streep was fantastic because, honestly, I hated her character. If she can elicit that kind of emotion out of me on the character, she's doing a good job. I think my favorite joke of the movie is Paul Guilfoyle's character's name is General Themes. And he's the guy who charged $20 to Jennifer Lawrence's character to get the snacks.
The free snacks, and
And she just kept bringing it up again. It's free. Why did he charge us? So General Themes, I thought that was the funniest part of the movie. After that is the mid-credit scene where Meryl Streep gets murdered. But
did you guys stay for the very end?
I hated that. But that goes, that goes with my general distaste of Jonah Hill.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, that one, yes, I saw it.
Yeah, he comes out of the bunker. He's like, Mom! And then he's the last person on Earth. And then he's just like, hey, YouTube, be out here. It's kind of cringy, but kind of funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the movie. It wasn't my favorite. I talked to Owen about it. Owen said he did not like the editing in this movie. He felt that it was poorly edited. So that's an opinion from my son.
Ah, okay. The NYU opinions, right?
Not yet. Well, yes. Most.
Nice. Do we have anything else for Don't Look Up? Okay. Lucy, I'm home. See, this is why we need the
transitions. I'm working on it. It's coming. Douglas.
I'll do the cast this. Being the Ricardo. Pittman. Sir, this is my job. Being the Ricardo is written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, starring Nicole Kidman, Javier Bardem, J.K. Simmons, Nina Arianda, Tony Hale, Alia Shakat, Jake Lacy, and Clark Gregg.
Yes. And one of Bob's favorite shows.
Actually, yes. I grew up like finding anything I could about the show. I think I've got it on DVD somewhere, the whole series. Thank you for letting me go first. I tried to find anything I could on like ever when I was growing up, like any books, any like there was a documentary done by Lucy Arnaz on her parents. It showed from beginning to end. The only thing I was on the fence with this movie, however, but because like Nicole Kidman did a great job as Lucy, but I couldn't get past J.K. Simmons trying to do a William Frawley. He just didn't look like the character to me. He got some of the qualities right, but like the arguing with Vivian Vance and there was the drunkenness, and I read about all this when I was like watching everything, and I'm sort of on the fence to liking it. It was sort of a rehash of things I'd seen before. So
hold on, you forgot something you told me in conversation, that J.K. Simmons wasn't fat enough to play Fred.
Right. That's one of the things I said I had a problem with. I didn't say he didn't do a good William Frawley, if you were listening.
I am listening, and that's where I'm going to come in here. I disagree with you 100%. I think everybody did their job perfectly. I absolutely love this film. Absolutely love it. I had so much fun watching it. I mean, do they look right? No, but I'm not watching the film for people look right. I want them to match their characters, like their mannerisms. I thought Nicole Kidman was perfect. I believed her by the end. She was Lucia Ball. Obviously, I know she isn't. She's not trying to do that. J.K. Simmons is one Best Supporting Actor of the Year after watching this. He was perfect as Fred. Absolutely perfect. I have no complaints. I don't know the other character Ali Chakrat played that well, because I don't really remember her, because I only remember her thing, but I love Fred, who was my favorite character on the show. So I think this film is absolutely perfect. I just wish it had a better flow. I found it a little choppy, the way they would dole out a bit and then go back to a different scene and then go back. And I wasn't interested in that. I was more interested in the show. I wanted to stay there for the whole movie and have everything evolve around the show. And obviously, I didn't care about Lucy, how she became Lucy, and they read her. I had no interest. It was interesting, yeah, but I really didn't care at the end. Or when, how she met Desi, I didn't care. I didn't care that Desi was cheating, and I'm still not sure if that really happened. Maybe you guys can correct me.
Yes, it had.
Obviously, Lucy 100% believed it and figured it out, but I didn't, but I wasn't there. I thought the Desi Arnaz stuff was interesting because I knew nothing about him. I didn't realize he had a whole band thing before he came to I Love Lucy and still was doing that. And yep, he was huge.
He brought over from Cuba.
I had no idea who he was. So I think this movie's great if you know nothing about things. I loved it. I had a great watching this.
I can hop in on that because I know nothing about I Love Lucy. I know of the show. The most I've probably seen of it would probably be the reference in Rat Race when Cuba Gooding Jr. is on that tour bus with the I Love Lucy girls. So yeah, there's that. Otherwise, I was pretty interested to see learning about how it came about. And I was kind of like, okay, I hope they delve into that just because, yeah, I didn't know much about it. The face. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know too much about I Love Lucy. So I liked Nicole Kidman. I loved Javier Bardem's performance. I really liked the writing. I love Aaron Sorkin's writing. I think my favorite parts was when they were filming it and just learning about the behind the scenes, learning about their production week. I loved the scenes with Alia Shakat as the writer and just learning about the writer's room kind of thing and just how they created the character together in a way. So I thought that was all interesting. I thought it was a great script. Interesting learning about how she might've been a communist and, I generally enjoyed this one. I think, I don't know if it could have delved even more into the relationship, but I think for the most part, I was most interested in the behind the scenes and how the show actually came about from someone who is born in the mid-90s.
Being a communist, like, it made sense to me. She was there with her grandfather. You did anything your grandfather told you to do at that age.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Doug's kids at 8, he told them, look, eat McDonald's. They're like, okay, we're eating McDonald's. Like, you know? Like, it's not really something you think about at that age. So I kind of just let the communist thing slide.
Yeah, but eating McDonald's and being a communist are pretty different things.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, if Doug told his kids, okay, you have to be a Democrat at 8 years old and they get to vote, of course they're going to vote for whoever Doug tells them to vote for. It's not like they have a mind of their own and go, okay, we can't vote for that.
Yeah, I thought that aspect was interesting.
This Aaron Sorkin thing to ever Aaron Sorkin, it had all of his little Aaron Sorkinisms. The main character laser focuses on something that does not seem important to any of the other characters, and they keep bringing it up again and again. In this case, it was, you know, the joke about the hands over the eyes. Does she really think that there will be seven other men? The fight at the table. And eventually, towards the end, you realize that they're laser focusing on something because it has a deeper meaning, because she realizes that Desi is cheating on her. So it's very much an Aaron Sorkin thing. He does it in all of his TV shows. And it worked here. I will admit it worked here. I didn't love this film. I thought it was good, but not great. I really liked the performances by Nicole Kidman. I thought J.K. Simmons was very good as well. But to me, it felt like a TV movie. It didn't feel like a big screen film. It felt more like something that you would see on HBO or something like that. I know it did have a theatrical release because they want to get Oscar nominations for Nicole Kidman. Probably they'll try for now I'm blanking on his Javier Bardem. They'll probably try to get an Oscar nom for him. And definitely they're going to want to get and probably directing. I'm not sure it was that good, to be honest. It was enjoyable, but not great.
Other than Simmons, I think none of them get nominated.
I think Kidman.
I didn't really see the hype about Simmons' performance, and I'm not sure if maybe that was because I don't know the original actor on the show. I didn't think he was in it for a lot.
Like, I think it's more screen time. It might be more a Simmons thing, that he's just one of the popular actors in Hollywood now. And I think he has an outside shot. Honestly, I think Nicole Kidman will get the most buzz.
Okay.
So I'm going to echo most of your, I thought it was very good, but I did think it was not like, it wasn't like a standout film for the year. I thought it was enjoyable. I thought the performances were fantastic. I think J.K. Simmons just does a very good job of projecting all the Fredisms that you would think out of that actor and that character. The stuff that I would have trimmed would have been the later perspective stuff, where they had older actors playing the younger actors from the writer's room. Like, I mean, I'm going, that's Linda Lavin. Is she, if it was someone that was an unknown, it would have made more sense to me. I would have just assumed that was the character in their older age giving us a, yeah, this is what happened perspective. But seeing Linda Lavin, I'm like, well, this is another actor playing a different version of a character that's in the past. So it just seemed like an unnecessary conceit. I don't think I recognize the male actors that played the writer's room guys.
Ronnie Cox is one of them.
Okay. Yeah, yes, that's right. An old, much older Ronnie Cox. So, you know, it was good. I mean, I could see her getting a nomination for actress for this, for sure. But I can't see anyone else. I mean, if you give a nod to Javier as supporting, it's just because you can't find another person, you know? So yeah, I do recommend it for sure.
But, and actually, you just brought up something that I had a problem with. I didn't understand when Kevin brought up the older actors talking to, was this supposed to be a mockumentary? And if so, why were we seeing flashes to other episodes in Lucy's mind mm-hmm. when they were saying like, oh yeah, they go to Italy and then she stomps on grapes. And then that flashes to one of the most famous episodes of I Love Lucy. If it was mm-hmm. supposed to be a mockumentary of some sort, why were we seeing that? If it's not supposed to be a mockumentary, why were they interviewing the old people? Right. There was some confusing stuff going on there.
Right. The flashes to stuff that happened in the past. So what I'm going to say is there's the present, the past, and the future. So the present being the mid-1950s events that we're watching, the future being the actors commenting on it, playing the writer's room people, and the past being things that happened before. So having just watched Cobra Kai, there's a great number of sequences in that series, which is very much like what happens in this film, where you've got footage of stuff that happened in the past that you interject as people are thinking about stuff that's going on screen. Like, so as, you know, Johnny Lawrence is confronting Sensei Kreese, we flash back and we see the events from 1984 playing in the background. So it's a way of telling us what's in their minds or how they remember things happening. But it's not, I mean, for Cobra Kai, it works, but for being the Ricardos, it's just, they wanted to film those sequences.
Yeah. And I guess it's almost like Lucy, like being like, cause she is so involved, she can and visualize it in her head, I guess.
Right.
Maybe, but I see your point. Cause it kind of like gave it almost a docudrama kind of vibe. So that was weird.
Mm-hmm. And that may be Sorkin, who's primarily doing political thrillers, where that kind of stuff happens all the time. You have the commentary.
A little bit of West Wing into the Lucy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doug, how long have you had that NYU sweatshirt?
Just a week.
Ah, okay.
We got it when Owen got accepted. So.
Ah, already showing the support. I like it.
Yes.
Are we ready for some vicious fun, guys?
Yes.
Vicious Fun, directed and story by Cody Callahan, written by Christopher Ware Smets and James Villeneuve, starring Evan Marsh, Amber Goldfarb, Ari Millen, Julian Richings, David Koechner, Robert Millay, Sean Bake, and Alexa Rose Steele. Did you guys know that David Koechner's last name isn't pronounced Kochner, but Koechner?
Yes.
I did not know that for the longest time.
Speaking of him, just some breaking news, and I don't have my breaking news music handy. He just got arrested for a hit-and-run DUI.
Seriously?
When?
Wow. Like
20 minutes ago.
Literally 20 minutes ago?
Yes! I'm not making this up.
Well, I gotta go. Damn.
Look it up. I was waiting for you guys to get to this segment. Prin, I hate to tell you, this is your movie. You gotta start.
Okay, one second. I'm looking up the
schedule. I can go. I'll go.
Yeah, go.
Vicious Fun. It was fun. I will admit that. I had a good time with this movie. The kills were nice. The story was good. Why the hell was it set in the 80s? It's so cliched now. Did they set it in the 80s just to have him wear the vest to look like Marty McFly? That's the only thing I did not like about this movie. Why was it set in the 80s? It's so cliche. There was no point to it. I thought the acting was good. There was no point for it to be set in the 80s. It's so cliched at this point. It lost a star for me just because it was set in the 80s.
Oh, okay. I guess because him as a film critic, it's like, okay, I have a big knowledge about slashers in the 80s kind of thing. I don't know. It's a fair point. I love the 80s aesthetic, though. I thought that was great. And I loved the different archetypes of serial killers. I thought this was such a cool concept with a support group for serial killers. I thought the staging, him being finding himself in the bar was pretty cool. I thought the gagging bit was really funny. The main guy, Evan Marsh, he reminded me of Jim Carrey, just with like how on he is, I think.
To your point about the serial killers, if they wanted to set in the past, set it in the 70s. Because the 70s was when there was the big serial killer boom. Like I'm stuck on this 80s thing. I just don't get why it was the 80s.
You're stuck on it kind of like,
yeah. A serial killer boom.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're kind of stuck on it like how Jennifer Lawrence is stuck on having to pay $20 for free snacks.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
bringing it up in every episode. But I mean, I feel like maybe it's because they really wanted the serial killer that is like goes through sorority houses, and that's kind of very Friday the 13th, maybe. But I mean, when was Slumber Party Massacre? 78?
Not that late.
Oh, 78. I think that might have been the 80s.
Okay. Yeah, either or. But I get your point, but I guess it worked for me. And just seeing Julian Richings as the clown, and just as like, I love him as an actor. So seeing him in this role just made me really happy. And I thought he was really funny. And Ari Millen I saw him in The Oak Room, because I actually talked with the filmmakers about The Oak Room back at Fantasia. And I didn't recognize that actor as Bob Nice. So I thought he did a great job. I love these kind of slashers, and I thought the kills were great. And I just, yeah, I love the acting, the style. Just, I thought everything about this really, really worked for me. And especially because this is exactly my shtick.
I would have liked a little more about what she, who, what, she worked for.
Carrie?
What? Yeah. What branch of, I don't know, government or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. Cause I guess it's, wouldn't be, seems too, would it be like CIA, CIA?
Like something like that.
SCIA? Serial killer CIA?
FBI. FBI, because they work in the country. CIA works out of.
Ah, smart. Okay. I get you. I'm not sure, though. Intern?
Okay. I actually saw this movie at Blood in the Snow in November. Which I still owe Simon this thing.
Is that a DVD?
What?
Or a pamphlet? Is that a DVD?
That's the pamphlet, which I still owe Simon. I really love that. I really love this movie. Like the girl, Amber Goldfarb, and Ari Melton, they really did a great job. Like Bob was like the great villain. He was like, he's looking at his, all of a sudden you see him disappear into the character. Not all of a sudden, but he disappeared into the character. And a few others did, but I really enjoyed this. Like it was, as I got to agree with Daniel and Doug on this. Like it was fun. It was fun. It was quick. Like it moved along, and like the fact that the support group all gathered in the bar to talk about this, and the main character is sitting there, going, "Where? How did I get in here? I got to get out of here." And he's stuck in there for a while. So then he's, but it was good.
Yeah, stuck in the. Fell asleep in the janitor's closet. Okay.
Actually, got drunk and felt.
Plus, I started this movie off and I'm like, what the crap am I watching? Because it was, he gets to the bar and I'm kind of like, this is an indie. I know it's an indie. It's got an indie feel. Not hating it. I want to see where it goes. And I love that bar scene. I'm like, I've been there. I think I've been at this bar and met this jackass at the bar talking to me about crap.
Really? Yeah, it's Toronto set.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I have. And then this movie just takes off for me. And I'm like totally invested. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm in. Oh, 100%. It just gets better and better as the film goes on. I love it. It's good. It's watchable. I love 80s slashers. It brought me back there. It was just fun. I give nothing to say. It's positive. Very positive.
Fish is fun, even.
Fish is fun.
Sorry, Bob. What were you saying?
It was filmed in Hamilton.
Ah, right. Okay.
I've been to bars in Hamilton, too.
Okay.
Kevin, did you see this?
No, I didn't.
He didn't. That's why he's on mute.
Oh, okay. Are we ready to leave no trace, then?
Already? We are. Kevin, okay. I don't know if saw it or not.
It was directed by Deborah Granick, written by Granick and Anne Rossellini, and based on the book by Peter Rock, starring Thomasin McKenzie, Ben Foster, Jeff Kober, and Dale Dickey.
Dale Dickey.
Want me to go first on this one? Or do you want to go first, Simon?
I can go first for a change. I don't mind talking about this. Daniel, this is a Daniel Melville. As soon as I watch this, I'm like, this is Daniel. The shooting style is Daniel. The slow pace is Daniel. Even the premise reminds you of something you would pick. I could never get into this. I tried hard to get into this. I'm like, okay, I don't care. I've seen this story. I know these characters. I don't have any interest in this. I said, oh, maybe the small town. They're not going to stay. They're escape. And there they go. They go escape. I'm like, I just don't. Air. I found this a slog to get through for me. It just was not something I know I would enjoy. I've seen it too many times. I've seen characters like this too many times. I've seen stuff. It just wasn't for me. I'm not saying it's a bad film. I don't want you to think that. I just, didn't do anything for me new with the genre. If this is a genre of wilderness films, I didn't care about anybody in it, didn't care about the daughter, annoyed the crap out of me. She just drove me nuts. I wish I saw a little bit more survival instinct from the main two. Do you know what I mean? They didn't really show me what they did in the wild other than they sold some stuff. I got that. And then they get buzzed. I'm like, really? Just seems like just a plot point to move it along. Again, I just found they were just trying to find something to move it along. I really found nothing they were saying was interesting. Nothing they were saying was really interesting to me. I just thought it was kind of dull.
It's always exciting when I can find a film that from kind of a recent year that went under your radar.
Yeah, I could see why.
Actually, I enjoyed this one. Big surprise to you, I'm sure. I thought Ben Foster's character is really interesting, how his past was kind of stopping him from being a great dad, and that's why they had to move all the time.
I thought he was a great dad. He was trying to look after his daughter all the time.
Well, just at the ending, because he has to keep moving, so he can't stay with her.
But she wants to stay. So being a good dad, he realizes that and goes, okay, I get it. I can't do this, but you can. Fine.
Okay, fair enough. I guess just that way. Okay, yeah, I guess they just mean in the way that he has to keep moving, so he has to make the sacrifice, right?
That's right. That's the big reveal at the end.
Yes, indeed. I like the shooting style. Kind of almost makes me think of Nomadland in a way, and just how the acting is very natural. Like, I mean, Thomas McKenzie and Ben Foster are the only like stars in the film. Even Thomas and McKenzie, I don't think was very big here because it was before Jojo Rabbit, before Last Night in Soho. I thought she was great though. I thought Ben Foster was great. I like seeing Dale Dickey for a little bit, and I found it has like a very natural acting, similar to Granick's other film, Winter's Bone, which I didn't really like.
I love Winter's Bone.
Yeah. I don't care about cutting open squirrels.
Number three on my film of the year that year.
You remember that from 2010? What you put it on? Wow. See, I don't have the memory you guys do.
Doug knows what I'm like. I remember every conversation we had. We discussed things. Doug hates me. So does Bob that way.
Fair. But yeah, no, I enjoyed this. I don't think I'd watch it again. But I liked it for watching it once. I felt like it was like, okay, this seems like a big enough film for me because I like Ben Foster. I like Thomas and McKenzie. So.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Daniel, for putting this on the list. I knew I had seen Thomas and McKenzie before Jojo Rabbit. I just didn't remember where. And then this movie reminded me, oh, this is where I saw her first.
Oh, okay.
What I mostly remember from this movie is that it was the first time I thought Ben Foster actually was a really good actor. I saw this before Hell or High Water.
Oh, so, okay. See, I knew he was a great actor from the time he played in a wheelchair. And I can't remember. He was on the street in a wheelchair. I can't remember the name of the film.
Yeah, I mostly knew him from when he played Angel in the X-Men movies.
Oh.
And that I didn't really care for his portrayal or that movie in particular.
I knew him from Hostage, where he plays a super insane like home invader in that Bruce Willis movie, and then a very angry character in Alpha Dog, that one with Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, I had seen Hostage, and I honestly didn't remember. I don't remember much about that movie at all, other than Bruce Willis was in it. But okay. Yeah, this was the first time that he really impressed me with his acting.
Okay, great.
Okay. I did like the shooting style, so thank you, Daniel, for that one. But I'm sort of in the middle between you and Simon on this, like in liking it, I'm going, like Simon said, it was slow and I'm going, let's go. But, I saw the relationship between the two. Yes, I know they're father and daughter, but like, that was well done. But other than that, I didn't release, like I wanted more, a little more to happen. I don't know what more could have happened, but just a little tiny bit more.
That's fair. Slow pacing, not a lot of beats, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that was the pacing for me that did it.
Have we finished leaving our trace already?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, that's it for this list.
Nothing left to leave.
Right, any final thoughts? Anybody buy anything?
Yes.
I thought hold on. I was got in trouble last time for not following the agenda. I thought that was on the next agenda.
It is.
It was just an awkward end, I think.
Yes.
Fair enough. No, because there are no garage sales, but I think the intern has something.
Yes, I do. I bought Spider-Man 3. I don't know which one it was. Spider-Man 3?
You said it was a third?
That one. I swear.
Just because you love that. The Toby dancing.
On Blu-ray. Jungle Cruise on Blu-ray. And The Bug Simon.
Really?
What? Yeah.
I didn't know they released Disney stuff on Blu-ray.
Well, it is.
Because it was going to be like a big theatrical release. So I don't...
And The Bug Simon.
I guess they still like Blu-ray.
Encanto has a DVD release? Encanto?
Encanto, yeah. I probably will.
And for Simon to watch, A Christmas Kiss. Just to bug him.
Are we done? Perfect.
I think so.
Yeah. I picked up Logan Lucky.
I like that movie. Okay.
I picked up The Green Knight.
The Green Knight?
I have yet to see. Yeah. Mm. And I bought for $5 on digital, I bought Aliens, the special edition. And I watched the 1990 special edition cut. Which is not on Disney Plus.
Kevin, you'll be getting a digital for Jungle Cruise.
Oh, cool. Not that I can't watch that on Disney Plus, but
if they make it, Billy McGuire,
no trace.
Billy McGuire, right, rubs some dirt in your eye.
If they make it, we'll watch it somewhere in the multiverse.